Tate Chronicles now transmitting.
Welcome to the Tate Chronicles on Healthcare Now Radio. And now, here's your host, Jim Tate.
Good day, citizens of the free world. From border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea, I bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for joining and tuning into the Tate Chronicles today. Join us as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare technology and new processes. I'm really pleased my guest today is Seth Cowett. Seth is the co-founder and CEO of OODA Health. Prior to his work at OODA Health, Seth served as the Vice President of Sales and Alliances for Castlight Health. He brings long and deep experience to the area of healthcare administration, including reimbursement and authorization. Seth, welcome to the show today.
Thank you.
Glad to have you. In my own experience in medical practice, I've really seen how back office processes can really direct the timely delivery of healthcare. So we're going to get into that at a pretty deep level as much as we can today. But first, tell me, what's the mission of your company and who are your customers?
Yeah, great. Thank you. The mission of OODA is to eliminate the administrative waste that we see as a tax on healthcare. Too often the friction between payers, providers, and patients creates layers of administrative expense that get in the way of affordability and accessibility. And so our mission is to liberate the system from that waste and create a more streamlined and simple payment experience. Our key customers are payers and providers. And already right there, a lot of people will raise an eyebrow at us because we're so used to in healthcare thinking of companies as either working for payers or working for providers. It's usually one or the other. And we believe very strongly that's part of the challenge in our healthcare system is that we're too often gravitating to one side of the fence, and we're very proud to work with both.
I know you have a couple of applications, in particular OODA Pay and OODA Optic. Can you tell us a little bit about those two applications and what is the challenge at each one of those addresses?
Yes. OODA Pay and OODA Optic are part of a suite of solutions we're rolling out to reimagine reimbursement. And the way we think about our products is we are looking for opportunities to remove friction from traditional reimbursement processes. And so as we think about reimbursement, or what's often called the revenue cycle, given your prior experience in medical practices, we are looking up and down the revenue cycle to identify where is the payer and provider relationship most failed or broken. And so when we look at it through that lens, we identified two areas that really stood out to us as needing a different payer-provider dynamic. One is patient billing, the second is prior authorization. So when you mentioned OODA Pay, OODA Pay is our patient billing product. And the perspective we took here is that I think we all know that patient billing is a challenge in the United States. It is a source of consternation and frustration for most patients at best. And at worst, it is a cause of bankruptcy. In fact, it is the leading cause of personal bankruptcy in the United States. What's more, though, is that it doesn't really work well today. Patients oftentimes do not pay their bills. In fact, about half of all patient balances in this country go unpaid. Half, right? And so that's kind of an astounding statistic. So I think most people would kind of acknowledge that patient billing doesn't really work well today. It frustrates many people, and it's also very expensive to administer. You're chasing patients for money after they've left the building for services they already consumed. Not a great process. So those facts are typically well known. I think what's unique for us is we entered it because we saw, again, this broken payer-provider relationship. Patient billing is traditionally managed by providers, yet it is the payer that is setting cost share and determining deductibles. And so in our view, it's an odd fragmentation. The owner of the product, the ones that designed the product, end up outsourcing the management of that product to a provider who never volunteered for that job in the first place. And only in healthcare is the merchant that provides the service, the provider, responsible for all the financial services that come with that service. It would be as if you and I, Tate, went out to a restaurant for lunch and the restaurant employed a collections agency behind the kitchen to chase us for a bill a month after our meal. That sounds odd or absurd, but that is healthcare today. So let me just take a breath there and see if that's a helpful explanation for our approach to OODA Pay. We're thinking about patient billing more holistically by bringing the payer and provider together in a billing solution.
You know, one of the things you said there, Seth, that the word that strikes so true is fragmentation. For a simple procedure, perhaps a two views of a chest x-ray, if you go to a provider, that, depending on whether you're Medicare, private pay, or some other third-party insurers, there could be any number of prices for that same exact procedure. I believe by yes. federal law, Medicare has got to be the lowest fee charged. I could be wrong there, but I believe that's true. And then we're not even talking about whether a particular provider, whether it's a procedure or some other healthcare thing, is in a network or not. So I really don't know how it could get any more fragmented. So does OODA Pay have a way to track its way through that fragmentation so that, you know, we talk about price transparency, but who knows what that means when if you go to the supermarket and a loaf of bread can cost 20 different things depending on, you know, what your coverage may or may not be.
Yes. Yes. And that is a core challenge around price transparency and the opacity of the markets. My prior company, Castlight Health, did a lot of work to advance stronger transparency into the prices of care. We are adjacent to that challenge here. I think what we're trying to do is say we want to give the payers more accountability and ownership over the products that they've created. And so they are not absent from the consequences of these poor experiences. And so that includes giving greater transparency on services and greater predictability. So one example that kind of gets to the heart of your question is when we work with payers on our solution, they suddenly see a strong incentive to rethink plan design and to ask, well, gosh, does it really make sense to give our member a $3,000 deductible for a hospital stay? Or would it be a better experience if we just set a flat copay and said, if you're in the hospital for a night, we know there's very little you can do at that point. So it's a flat $1,000 per night, maybe capped at three nights. It's the same cost here at the end of the day, but there is a certain level of clarity that can now be offered with a different plan design. And so I think bottom line is that when you create some accountability and connection between the design of the product and the consequence of the product, you can start to address some of these system challenges.
You know, that issue of clarity, when I was working in a large specialty practice, 15 or 18 pulmonologists, patients would come to see us. And often the first question they'd ask at the front desk would be, what's today's charge going to be? We had no idea what the charge was going to be because we didn't know what tests or procedures or what level of visit. I mean, we really had no idea. So there was nothing that we could tell them. And so just a clarification, as you said, if you're in a hospital and if your copay's $1,000 a day, at least you know what's coming and you can prepare for it.
That's right.
And there's not this overhanging, the great unknown.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, OODA Optic, let's talk about that a little bit. Tell me about that.
Yeah. And so a lot of people, you know, might wonder, why is this, you know, company focused in two very different areas? Or, you know, maybe focus is the wrong word. It's spread across two very different areas. You know, on one hand, we're talking about patient billing, and now I'm going to start talking about prior authorization, which is the focus of Optic. For us, though, they're connected with a similar theme and orientation, which is, again, coming back to this concept of rethinking reimbursement and identifying the places of fragmentation and failed relationship between payer and provider. And we just spoke about how the fragmentation between payer and provider leads to a lot of the challenges in billing. We saw a very similar theme with prior auth. Lots of people have very strong opinions about prior auth. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Should we have it? Should we not? I'm not going to enter into that debate. Mm-hmm. It exists. It exists for a reason. It's here to stay. But it is way too cumbersome to manage, both for payers and providers. And there's a lot that can be done to simplify and streamline the administration of prior auth. And so here, like with patient billing, we see fragmentation in roles. Payers design the utilization management program, and then they invest in a number of resources that they think might help the provider, but ultimately don't. So for example, many payers we talk to are investing in portals that providers can use to upload information. And these payers are very proud of the functionality of these portals. They're dynamic, they're easy to use, But then you talk to providers and they complain that these portals are not helpful to them because they work with 20 payers. And so to use one portal is not useful when they have 19 other places they need to go for information. And so it's just an example of where each side is kind of building an approach or investing in solutions that really aren't encouraging or facilitating coordination. It's kind of driving more divergence. And so what we're doing here, like with billing, is bringing the two sides together in a more collaborative approach where we are connecting to EHRs, we are applying OCR and NLP technology to faxes so that we can automate and streamline the administration of prior auth. So in our solution, providers don't even really need to submit information. We can automatically retrieve it on their behalf, process it through the payer, and get them a real-time response, or at least a response within a few minutes.
Back in days that I can only describe as terrible for prior authorization, the practice that I worked at, we would often have to send patients for expensive imaging or scans. And almost all of those required prior authorization. And it wasn't unusual for a doctor to actually have to get on the phone and talk to somebody to get prior authorization, which was, you mentioned earlier, to lessen friction. There can't be much more friction than having a busy provider get on the phone to try and talk somebody to release prior authorization. And so when you talk about getting approval, prior authorization, maybe for a PET scan or some other expensive radiographic imaging diagnostic process, are you talking about that if a patient has a certain ongoing diagnosis or has been newly diagnosed with something, there'd be an automatic approval? Or what kind of information would need to be that could get this down to minutes as opposed to longer, sometimes days, to get prior authorization passed?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there's, the information is the same information that's submitted today. It's just submitted in a much more efficient process. So let's just be clear on what happens today, right? So today, if you need to have a prior authorization approved, you first have to submit it. And then there's usually a lot of documentation that goes along with that request. And so you probably need to submit the patient's medical record. And if it's a patient that's been hospitalized, that medical record can be 400, even 500 pages. That needs to be faxed or mailed or uploaded in a portal. And that in of itself could take a couple days or at least a few hours to get done. Then all that information needs to be submitted to the payer. The payer needs to receive it. And now there's someone on their side who needs to manually review 400 pages of information to determine if that prior auth is okay. And hopefully all that information sent is sufficient and the response can come back with an approval. But oftentimes there's something missing, family history, a pharmacy prescription that they're looking for. So there's then some back and forth where the provider needs to resubmit something, go into a work queue, back and forth and back and forth. What we are doing is trying to create a more intelligent approach. So first, on the provider side, we don't think that sending 400 pages via fax is the best approach in 2021. So instead, we are leveraging APIs and connections to EHRs. We work at Epic, we work with Cerner, we work with other EHRs, so that we can automatically retrieve the relevant clinical information. It does not need to be printed and faxed. That's step one. And when we're able to retrieve it directly from the EHR, we can maintain a more structured format for it. So rather than receiving a 400-page PDF, it is now organized in an interface, and I wish, you know, we could show it visually here, but you have to imagine it. Just imagine a clean consumer-oriented interface that payer UM leaders can use to quickly identify the necessary items. And so we use our technology to say, gosh, I bet you're looking for a lab value or maybe the X-ray scan given the medical policy for this procedure. Here you go, payer leader. And so it's the same information, Tate, as you, as you're probably used to seeing in the past, but it's organized and exchanged much more efficiently.
You know, I'm glad, Seth, you brought that up because the whole concept of interoperability, to use a well-worn phrase, is the holy grail of liquid healthcare data. Getting to it, to interoperability, really through these, as you mentioned, the APIs, those application program interfaces so that with appropriate permissions, a third party can reach into an EHR and the new fire standards that are coming, saying, don't give me the entire patient record. Okay. I just want the relevant ones to answer this question on prior authorization. So we're really at that tipping point right now by regulation.
That's right. And it's exciting and it's a wonderful opportunity for the ecosystem, but it also leaves payers very ill-equipped to manage and ingest all that data efficiently.
Let me get off track just a minute here. Talking about price transparency, I read an article recently in the New York Times that had to do with the pricing around COVID-19 testing, and that some hospitals could hang a banner out front saying, you know, walk in and be tested. And they didn't mention it, but when those individuals who were not sick, just want to be tested, walked in, they were walking into an emergency department and automatically incurred an emergency department standard fee, sometimes $2,000. And so there's never going to be a requirement, I don't believe, for prior authorization to go to an emergency department. And so there's still some, you know, areas of price transparency that are opaque, as you said earlier.
Yes.
And so other than I don't know how those kind of issues are ever really going to be addressed, since billing is often dependent on the place of service, ambulatory environment, inpatient, emergency department. That's one thing that, you know, most providers are very aware of. And I guess we'll see if some regulation occurs along that for the transparency.
Yeah, I would hope that will come. I mean, it's hard because a lot of the price transparency regulations are very oriented to providers and provider obligations. And it's a shame that the legislation didn't include payers as being accountable for this too, because again, it's leading to more of this fragmentation. I do think if we really want to advance these transparency rules, especially around COVID testing, whatever it is, it really should be a joint payer provider approach.
Exactly. There seem to be some new regulations around price transparency. Do you have any comments on those or how those are going to affect things?
The recent rules?
Yes.
The ones that were released in December?
Yes, exactly.
I think it's well-intended, but I don't imagine, frankly, much impact here. I think that just having providers post fee schedules on a website is not ultimately going to help address most of the consumer pain points here, because those charge master rates are rarely the ones that are used, especially for commercially insured patients. As I just mentioned,
exactly.
Payers don't really have much of a role to play in any of this, so they will continue to kind of have a divergent strategy. I'm a little bit hopeful that some of the surprise billing legislation that was part of it will help remove some of the, you know, the out-of-network charges that happen in a lot of medical settings. I think that's one positive benefit that will come, but I don't see the ball being advanced meaningfully through these transparency rules.
You know, that's true because, as we kind of referred to earlier, if you post the price for a chest x-ray, well, it could be $25 or it could be $118, depending on whether you're self-pay or have Medicare coverage or some other third party. So
right.
Very, very difficult to do that. Now, you brought up the issue of surprise billing. Tell us a little bit more about surprise billing. What's that?
Well, I want to first just acknowledge that it's not necessarily my area of expertise. I'm not doing work in the surprise billing field specifically, but of course it's related to patient billing overall. And so I'm happy to spend a minute on it. Surprise billing is, one could argue there's lots of forms of surprise billing. A surprise bill is when you're surprised by how much you owe. It's different from what you expected. You weren't expecting to get this bill. And there's lots of examples of it. You know, hospitals will employ physicians or frankly contract with physicians who will bill separately. So you can go in to a hospital expecting care, one care event, and you end up getting three bills that you didn't expect. And that in and of itself can be a surprise bill. So we are addressing a lot of that because in working with the payer, we can identify through claims history any possible bill that's going to come to the consumer and try to consolidate that together. So that's one way in which we are removing surprise from billing. With that said, when people use the term surprise billing, it typically refers to a specific out-of-network situation where the hospital has contracted with a physician or physician group that is not in network with the health plan. And so what ends up happening is the patient is admitted to a hospital where they expect that hospital to be in network, which it is, but then they start getting bills from physicians in that hospital that are not in network. And because they're not in network, the billing is much more expensive. And that is a challenge that comes back to, you can argue both sides of it, right? That it's the payer's fault because the payers have failed to offer a reasonably sufficient rate to those physicians. So the physicians had no choice but to decline being covered in the network. You can argue the other side of it and say that the physicians are asking for too much money and they should absolutely agree to be part of the network, and that they're basically pushing the majority of the cost to the patients by not being covered by insurance. And whatever side you take, that's kind of the heart of the issue.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, there's also the third option, which is just be transparent about it. And there may be transparency when you're going into a hospital to have a hip replacement. There may be something that you sign as you go in that says your anesthesiologist may be out of network, even though the hospital and your surgeon's in network, and you just sign it quickly and go on. And so that disclaimer may be there, but it still is a surprise. That's a kind of a common one I hear about. Somebody's had surgery in network, but you know, somebody who's in the room during the surgery is not in network. So I'm sure that's being worked on in some way to, you know, just to eliminate the surprise of it all.
Yes. And I think most of that will have to come from government regulation. But, you know, the part that we're trying to play here is at least help people within network care know that when they go to a hospital and they receive a bill, it really reflects the totality of the care that they've received, and that they're not going to get a bunch of separate, you know, one-off bills and EOBs that don't make sense together.
Yeah, those one-off ones that kind of come through, a good example is maybe if you have a biopsy, and of course the whoever performed the actual, not the procedure of the biopsy, but the analysis of the biopsy, you're going to be billed by them. And you know, people say, well, I never saw them. Well, but they're in the chain of care. So whatever can be done to, I don't know if it's education, but whatever to increase transparency in this fragmented system is a good thing.
One thing,
we only have a couple more minutes here, Seth, but one thing I want to congratulate OODA Health on and tell our listeners, OODA Health is OODA-health.com. OODA-health.com. There's some really great resources there. I looked at, there's some on-demand webinars that are really timely. And there's some really meaty blog posts there. So there's some real effort going in to provide education there. I saw your name on a few of those things. So I know you're involved with those. So that's always a good thing to do to help educate the work you're doing, as well as the overall issue of billing and prior authorization.
Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, we take a lot of pride in the resources we put together. We spend a lot of time investing. Yeah,
and that's hard to do. It really is, because people depend on it. If our listeners want to learn more about OODA Health and what you do and how you can help them, what's the best way for them to contact you?
They can reach out. I'm Seth@OODA-health.com. You can also go to our website. There are places on our website for you to reach out to us as well. And we'd love to hear from you.
Well, great. Well, Seth, time has rushed by here for us, and we're totally out of time. I want to thank our audience for joining us on this episode of the Tate Chronicles. And of course, I offer a special salute to my guest today, Seth Cohen of OODA Health. Seth, thanks for coming aboard today.
Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
I've enjoyed it. You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. Until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.
Tate Chronicles transmission ending now.